Good morrow!
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Welcome back to
Shaky Understanding. This week we are talking about The Merry Wives of Windsor, which I'm pretty sure Shakespeare was wasted when he wrote it. So how about you give us some Shakespeare abridged?
We find ourselves in the country town of Windsor. So this is out of the, like, royal courts and the big city. It's important, sort of. Everything in this play is important, sort of. Let's start there. So we see a couple of our characters, Justice Shallow, Sir Hugh, who's a teacher, and Master Slender, and they're all talking about how mad they are at Falstaff, who, along with his servants, like, beat up and robbed them. Casual. And they are going to Master Page's house to confront him, who is having dinner there. Now, Sir Hugh talks to his friend Slender there and changes the subject to saying, hey, and let's try and get you to marry Master Page's young daughter, Anne Page. So when they go and confront Falstaff at Page's house, we see, first of all, Falstaff pretty much apologizes immediately. And we see how awkward Slender is with Lady Anne and, like, incredibly socially inept he is around her. Then we meet Falstaff and all of his homies at the Garter Inn. They all are staying at this one big inn. And we learn three things. Falstaff loves money and wine. He's running out of money, and he thinks the best way to fix that is by seducing the rich wives of the two rich families in town, Mistress Page and Mistress Ford. So he sends his servants off with love letters to each of them, and the servants are kind of, like, mad at Falstaff, and they're like, screw this, we're not going to give these love letters to them, we're going to tell their husbands about what Falstaff's trying to do instead. Then, at this other house, Mistress Quickly gets a servant from Slender is sent to Mistress Quickly to try and convince her to turn Lady Anne's mind towards marrying Slender, because Mistress Quickly is apparently really good friends with Anne, even though we never see them together in this play. So maybe she's lying, maybe she is. There's a lot going on in this play, so it could just be offstage. But Mistress Quickly's master, Dr. Caius, comes in, and we learn that she's also promising Dr. Caius to tell Anne that Dr. Caius would be the best match for her. And Dr. Caius has a crazy French accent, and that comes into play later. And he finds out that there's a messenger from Slender there, and he blames Slender's suit on his, like, friend Sir Hugh, and so Dr. Caius sends a challenge to fight him to Sir Hugh. Then all those people leave, and this other guy, Lord Fenton, comes in, and he talks to Mr. Quickly and is like, hey, I really need you to keep talking to Anne Page for me, and please keep trying to convince her that I'm the best match for her. And Mistress Quickly is like, oh, of course, Fenton, I totally will. And we find out that Mistress Quickly is like, I'll do what I told all of them. I'll tell her they're all kind of good in their own way. And she just plays for all teams. She out here trying to make that money. So then we see the plot. Mistress Ford and Mistress Page received the same letter from Falstaff, our main character, and it's the exact same love letter. And so they're so amazed that he would try and do this, they decide to get revenge by embarrassing him and pretending that they are going to cheat on their husbands with him. Then we see back at the inn, So then we see Falstaff's servants telling the ladies' husbands that Falstaff's plan is to sleep with their wives. And Master Page is like, oh, pff, good luck with my wife. All right, guy. And Master Ford is like, oh my god, my wife's totally gonna cheat on me. I'm so jealous. I already think she's, I've already had my suspicion, blah, blah, blah. And Master Page is like, you're crazy. And he goes off. And Ford is like, I'm gonna prove Page wrong. I'm going to disguise myself and talk to Falstaff and try and convince him to try and sleep with my wife. Then, if he does, I have proof. And if he doesn't, I have proof she's true, and that'll help too. Either way, my time is spent well. So then at the inn, we see Mistress Quickly goes to Falstaff and starts the plan in motion for the ladies, Mistress Ford and Mistress Page, and tells him, oh, Mistress Ford's husband's going to be out of town tomorrow. You should come over and hang out. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to get these ladies, I'm going to get all this money, it's going to be great. So Ford has convinced the host of the Garter to introduce him to Falstaff at the inn in disguise as this guy named Brooke. Get it? Because, like, Ford and Brooke, they're both, like, river stuff. And so Ford comes in disguised as this guy named Brooke, and he says, "Oh my gosh, I have all this money I don't know what to do with. Hey, you, fat guy," to Falstaff. "I will give you all this money and a bunch of wine if you can woo this woman named Mistress Ford, because I'm in love with her, but she won't do anything with me or fall in love with me because she's true to her husband. But if I know that she slept with someone else, she won't have that excuse anymore." And Falstaff is like, "That makes sense. I'll take your money and I will woo her for you." So Falstaff's plan is already working for him, even though he hasn't slept with anyone yet. So then we see the challenge that had been laid out earlier come to pass. Sir Hugh and Dr. Caius meet up and try to fight, but everyone is there, like Master Page, Host, Slender, and all of his company. They all end up just laughing at them and taking their weapons. Now, Sir Hugh, who has a crazy Welsh accent, and Dr. Caius, who has a crazy French accent, connect that the host was trying to make fun of them and kind of pit them against each other, and so they decide to plot revenge on him. Then Falstaff visits Mistress Ford, and they are quote-unquote interrupted before anything can happen by Mistress Page saying, "Oh no, your husband's coming back, Mistress Ford." And so they hide Falstaff in a disgusting laundry basket and have her servants take him out and dump him in the river down the street. So Mistress Ford's husband comes back, searches the house, and is like, "I know there's a man in here," in front of all of his friends, like Master Page and all these other guys. And then he's super embarrassed when he can't find anyone. And everyone's like, "You're super jealous." And he's like, "All right, maybe I'm jealous. I'm sorry." Then we see Fenton and Anne alone. And we find out that Anne's father doesn't like Fenton because he thinks he wants Anne only for her large dowry, which Fenton literally says, which was true in the beginning, but now I really like you. And so he's wooing for love now. Slender tries to talk to Anne. Like, Fenton leaves, and then Slender comes in, tries to talk to Anne again, and we see how bad this guy is with ladies. Like, so bad. And why he's trying to marry her, he doesn't even know. And then, in the end, Ford, disguised as Brooke again, talks to Falstaff, and finds out that Falstaff was at his house and was taken out in that laundry basket, and that Falstaff has a date with Ford's wife that night. And so Ford was like, "I know what." And then, out of the blue, kind of, we hear about these Germans that are talking to the host of the Garter. And the host of the Garter is just the guy that runs the Garter Inn. And that's who Caius and Hugh are trying to get revenge on. So it's sort of revealed that Caius and Hugh are disguising themselves as Germans. And they convince the host of the Garter to bring some horses out to them, and then they just steal the horses, and the host is like, "Oh no, my money," and that's their revenge. They got it. So Falstaff visits Mistress Ford again, and she and Mistress Page again are interrupted with the impending return of their husbands, and so they disguise Falstaff in all these old ladies' clothes, and she's super fat, so that's the only clothes they have that fit him, and it just happens to be they make him look like the aunt that Master Ford hates and thinks is a witch. So Master Ford comes back, doesn't even start looking for a guy, and just beats up this aunt who he thinks it is. Which is super messed up when you really start thinking about it. So after Falstaff is shoved out of the house there, Mistress Ford decides that that was enough to really play those tricks on their husbands, and lets them in on what's going on. So Mistress Page and Mistress Ford tell their husbands, "Oh, we were just doing this because we wanted to get a rise out of you, Master Ford, and because we wanted to make fun of this crazy knight." And so they all decide to make one big plot against him and take him to the spooky part of the woods where they're going to disguise themselves as spirits and pinch and burn him with candles. Seriously. Throughout this play, we've sort of heard who everyone's opinion on who Anne should marry is, and it kind of comes down to this. Master Page, her dad, wants her to marry Slender. He seems kind of rich, but really bad with women. Mistress Page, her mother, wants her to marry Dr. Caius, I guess because she says he's a good match. And then Anne herself wants to marry Fenton. So while they're all disguised as fairies, each of them has told the suitor they want to marry her, "Oh, go find Anne, she's in greed. Oh, go find Anne, she's in white, blah, blah, blah. And then take her to get married while all this is going on. And then what's happened will happen and no one can stop us. Like my wife slash my husband slash my mom and dad." So they all have a plan to get Anne married while everyone is pinching and burning Falstaff. The plot goes great. Anne comes back. Well, first of all, Dr. Caius and Slender come back and go, I married a boy! Or I almost married a boy, but I think Dr. Caius says, I married a boy! Which I don't know how that works if you're, like, a Christian nation. I don't know if you're just married to that person or if you, like, are not married to them because sodomy. Anyway, Anne comes back and is like, sorry, this was my plan. I wanted to marry Fenton, but now we're married and you can't stop us. And her parents are like, all right, I guess the best thing to do is accept this now. She's like, great. They all have a laugh, and even Falstaff is laughing. It's not exactly like Twelfth Night where Malvolio is left really sad. So even he's kind of laughing. And Ford jokes that Brooke will finally get to lay with Ford's wife because they're the same person. And that's the end.
We have my favorite lady, the dopest of the dope queens, Mistress Quickly.
Oh, hi, I'm Mistress Quickly. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're so, so good.
Is it okay that I brought my own drink?
Yeah.
Totally.
Good. Okay, because I always say you gotta have a cocktail if you're gonna talk.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Absolutely. I think this is the first play that we've read that I've just genuinely not liked.
I'm so glad. I mean, I'm not glad, like, but I definitely handed you this one and was like, I don't think you're going to like this.
And that's so kind of what you wrong. Said. Yeah, that's kind of what you said with Cymbeline as well, I think.
Yeah, it was.
But I ended up kind of enjoying it because I feel like Cymbeline Shakespeare is poking fun at himself.
And you still don't think he was, but
well,
I'm cool with
I
that.
Can re- I interpret it that yeah. way. It's my postmodern interpretation.
Yeah.
So I kind of enjoyed that aspect of it.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't, like, the greatest, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
This was just, it's just a slog. It's such a mess.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because, mm-hmm. First of all, let me just say, they call me the human Tinder around here, okay?
Oh, man! Oh. HT.
HT, you know, HS, human Snapchat, whatever you want to call it. You know,
you also deliver portraits of, like, people and seductive poses.
Well, you know, there's a lot of pictures that I just keep in my closet because, you know, some things are just not proper for a lady to look at.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Fair,
you know,
fair.
I got a good library going there. You know, yeah, people ask me to sketch their privates all the time.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes I do it and sometimes I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I gotta say, look, I know this isn't your favorite play, as you call it,
uh-huh.
but honestly, I believe that this is a very progressive city, town to live in. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, the woman here that we talk to each other, okay, we talk
yeah.
to each other here, we don't take shit from the men, okay? If,
that's
a,
true.
If a man
true.
Is not appreciating his wife around here, you know, we make
he gets
him,
got.
Yeah, we make sure that he gets jealous as fuck, okay? And then, and then he knows how to appreciate a woman.
Yeah.
So.
That's true.
He does become a very appreciative man by the end of this play.
Yeah.
Yeah. The women are pretty great in this play.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, the only saving grace, is that the female characters are so awesome. But then when I was reading it and I was, like, thinking, oh, these women are so cool, then I was thinking, yeah, but they were all still dudes.
I know. Isn't that
you
crazy?
Know?
Well, that may be true. But, you know, there's one line I really like when Mrs. Page is talking to Ford towards the end of
mm-hmm.
this caper.
Mm-hmm.
He says, oh, he doesn't like that the women are so close. He's like, if we husbands died,
oh, yeah.
you two would marry. And Mrs. Page says, yes, we would. Two other husbands.
Yeah.
Which is great, because you know what? Men, don't kid yourself, but, you know, we can replace you very easily.
Yeah.
I got a whole long list of names. Oh, you didn't see all of them. I got gentlemen everywhere.
Oh, yeah?
They're paying me lots of money next in line when a woman opens up. Opens up.
Yeah,
I'm
like,
sorry, that wasn't the right word.
Ooh,
but, you know,
up.
She will open up if she wants to. Look, we women take control of our
sexual
agency here, okay? Open your legs if you want to open your legs.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
you know, I got a whole list of men. Do you want a man? Are you guys married?
I'll take a man.
Are you married?
She'll take
you
a man.
Married?
I'm not married.
She's married,
you're
basically.
A maid.
Yeah.
She's a maid, for sure.
That's okay, I'm a maid. High five right there.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there's a great quote, I think it's from a book called All the Single Ladies, Unmarried Women in the Making
uh-huh.
of an Independent Nation by Rebecca Traister.
You think
my
it's a book?
I think,
I've
no,
never
no, no,
read
I think,
in my life. How do you,
I,
do you know how to read?
I do know how to read, but I think the quote is from that book, is
Got
what
it.
I'm saying.
Got
I know
it.
That that's a book that
okay.
I read.
Okay.
But the quote is something along the lines of, dick is low quality and abundant.
Yes, most dick is low quality. I mean, I like, well, men shower once every 2 months or something, right? We women are always doing our laundry down by the river, so by the ford,
getting clean,
they call it.
Oh, so
we're constantly getting clean. You know, the thing is, man, you guys gotta do laundry more if you want to get laid.
Yeah.
You gotta wash your dicks, boys.
Wash your dicks, do laundry. That's Mr. Squiggly's tips for dating.
At the end, we all pretend to be fairies at the end of this caper.
Yeah, it's true.
But the truth is, there are fairies and there are witches in this town, and this is what I want to say. At the end of this story, Mr. Ford believes that his wife is true and that she's not cheating on him and that he is not a cuckold. But let's all call a spade, okay? There is no real proof that she couldn't have been cheating on him this whole time. Because she tricks him, and then the real trick is that she convinces him it was all a trick. But now he trusts her. So you know what? Now he trusts her, and now he can't doubt her again, and now she can go off and fuck whoever she wants. And, you know, that is the real beauty of this play, is that ultimately the women win. So
that's
true.
That's true. Here are some of my thoughts. Sir Hugh just has a weird voice.
Yeah,
his dialogue's written in a Welsh dialect, and it's weird. Dr. Caius is written in a French accent, and that's also quite strange. He says in Act 3, Scene 3, "If there be one or two, I shall make the third." Are we really having a poop joke right now, Shakespeare? Like,
why
did
not?
We go to that level?
Of course.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this play is, like, Shakespeare got real drunk one night and said, "People of Falstaff, I'm going to write whatever the heck I want." And it's just stupid. It's not great. Let's see.
Caius, I gotta say, first of all, I am the human Tinder, but sometimes I'm also the human grinder, okay?
Oh, gotcha.
You know, Dr. Caius and Slender are both hitting up the grinder, okay? And there's nothing wrong with that, okay, fellas? There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes, times are a little different. I know you guys are from the modern era and everybody's just out there doing whatever, you know. But where I'm from, you know, we got to be a little discreet. So you know, I set up that whole fairy thing, you know. Hey, the fake fairies, those weren't fake fairies. Slender and Caius, they picked those fairies out.
Oh, they wanted those boys.
Yeah. So that's sort of what I do, is I layer my dating, my matchmaking, so everyone wins.
Wow.
And and Caius, he may sound like an asshole, but you know, he's just trying to find his way in the world.
Mm-hmm. I see that. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah.
Oh, the reason I brought that up too is you saying a stupid joke. So there's quite a stupid conversation between Caius. Yeah, when he finds, what's his face, Rugby or whatever, someone's hiding in his closet. And he says, "No honest man shall come in my closet." He's trying to say, "Don't worry about it, guys, I got nothing to hide." But we all know the truth. I know the truth, I know everything.
I gotcha.
He just wants everyone out of the closet.
Yeah.
Like, coming outside.
But talking about the women being so awesome, Anne Page has a line in Act 3, Scene 4. She says, I think this is after her parents are trying to talk to her about who she should marry, or trying to convince her to marry Slender. And she says, "Alas, I had rather be set quick in the earth and bowled to death with turnips." Ouch. If you'd rather be buried in the earth and, like,
planted with turnips.
Yeah, with turnips, like, than marry someone that you don't want to marry.
Ugh. But I mean, think about it. That's like the equivalent of being forced to go to school for engineering when you wanted to get a fine arts degree, like nowadays. Because that's like what the rest of your life's gonna look like. Whoever you married then.
Yeah, that's true.
The way the rest of your life's
gonna look. Parents, let your kids major in art.
Or engineering, if that's what they want.
Yeah, let them do whatever they want.
That's the real issue. Yeah.
That's real. Yeah.
It's also pretty fucked up, I gotta say, that these parents are arranging for their daughter to be kidnapped.
Actually, that's a good point. So much wrong with this play.
The real criminals here are these parents who are trying to trick their daughter into marrying some man during this whole ordeal, and I gotta say, I just find that pretty disturbing.
But there is consent involved, because each of them thinks that they have and approval of it, because they're like, okay, when this guy taps on you, you say budget. Like, when he says, like, toodly, you say budget. I don't remember the first word. Yeah. I just remember budget. But, yeah, so, like, there's a little bit, like, it's not exactly an abduction, because she's supposed to say budget to be taken away. Well, and she just says yes to that because she knows she's going to run away with Fenton to get married. Oh, Fenton, also, the only character who speaks verse in this play.
That's because he's the only good guy.
Uh-uh, did you hear what he says?
When?
In Act 3, Scene 2, in like line 70-ish, he makes reference to that he used to hang out with the lascivious prince and Poins.
Well, yeah.
And he's super poor now because of it. So he used to do like whorehouses and like spend a bunch of money. And do
but people can
experience.
People can be reformed. I ain't got no problems.
You want a man who's got experience.
It's true.
And who's come around and it's who's going to be a good. And you know what? It's okay. Well, look, the whores are just doing their job, okay?
Yeah.
Stay. Don't criticize them.
All right. You're
look,
right.
The whores are the only people in this whole town that have jobs. Have you noticed that none of the people in this town have jobs?
No, everyone has a vocation, but no one's doing it.
Nobody has a real job.
Dr. Caius.
You know what this is? This
Professor
is...
Hugh.
Yes.
Professor teaches the little Latin boy.
So he doesn't even teach it, though. She's like, can you just make sure he's learning in the actual school he goes to?
I feel like that was just a necessary... That's like when your Tinder bio is too long and nobody cares, okay? We're just looking at the photos, okay?
Yeah.
We don't care that you speak Latin, okay? This is just an unnecessary moment in this story. Honestly, I think when it happened, it was some sketch 101 scene, and then Shakespeare decided to put it in because he couldn't get rid of it. He was emptying his computer and saw it and was like, let's put this right here. So that's what I think that is.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that Latin scene? Falstaff, I didn't note the scene on this one. It's sometime after Act 3, Scene 4, though. But Falstaff is talking about how men are so frail and blah-de-blah, and I just want to punch him in the face.
Men are so frail. No, but that's still a joke, though.
Oh, it's supposed to be a joke?
Yes, because...
I thought he was being serious.
No, because all Falstaff does in this play is do things that show how ridiculous he is. So,
okay.
He's saying men are so frail because, like, all he does is complain about every little thing. He's like, oh, I don't have any money. Oh, I wish I had more wine.
Oh, okay. So he's being self-reflective.
Oh, these women love me. And then, like, they're, like, totally making fun of him. He's like, oh, everyone hates me and that's not fair. I'm so nice. But he's not nice. He's trying to cheat on these wives to get money. Like, all this stuff. So it's more about Shakespeare, like, giving that character something that's making fun of him.
Falstaff makes, the biggest mistake, amateur mistake, sends the same text message to both the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you gotta switch it up, okay? If you're gonna talk to multiple people, figure out how to do it, okay? Because these women, they talk. There's no screenshot. They show each other the letters, but that is like a screenshot,
nowadays, for sure.
So, Falstaff, he just, amateur mistake, man.
Yeah.
It is misogynistic, but all of this is misogynistic. But I would argue that this is less misogynistic than some other plays because the women talk. Well, you know what? If that Latin scene were two women, then this would probably pass the Bechdel test. But I don't think it does as it
stands.
Yeah,
I was thinking
that's
about
true.
It.
Maybe, yeah.
Because Mr. Squiffy's always talking to the boys about their marriage.
Yeah.
Which is technically about a woman.
But it is more. There's that line. So, the wives be merry, they be honest, too. The wives are basically saying,
that's
like,
great
fuck
line.
You guys. Like, just let us do whatever the fuck we want. And I think in that regard, it's pretty female-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
They're very independent women, but the plot is just, like, let me seduce women to make money off of.
And the women are like,
but
that's
cute,
you can't do that.
Yeah, that's inherently wrong.
Yeah.
That's sort of what this play is framing. They're like,
that's true.
Not gonna work.
That's true.
And the woman, ultimately, when Master Ford, before he realizes this is all just a prank, he has that speech about, like, I know what I am. Basically, he's a cuckold. He's a little cuck, okay? He's a beta cuck. Ford is a beta cuck. And you know what? He's kind of cool with it. So I gotta say, in that regard, it's kind of female-friendly because he kind of is like, I am what I am. Well, anyways, moving on, and we'll figure out from here. He doesn't go and strangle her like some other plays have done, okay?
Well,
all right,
that's
let's
true.
Let's be real. Like,
that's true.
Oftentimes, and I've heard other towns over.
Mm-hmm.
You A woman gets strangled for this shit that they didn't even do. And in this case, she's pretending she did it. So, you know, he has reason to be suspicious.
That's true. That's totally true.
I listened to this other podcast called Unbarred by this guy named Joel Fishbane. And he had this great, first of all, it was great about Merry Wives of Windsor. He also had similar feelings to you and I of, like, what is this play and why? And that's kind of what he talks about. But one thing he says is, it's like if there was fan fiction written about Shakespeare plays in the day by Shakespeare.
Yes.
It's this.
I was going to say, like, this is the sequel that no one asked for.
It's like the alternate universe version of, like, Twilight that you see so many fan fictions of, but it's like this instead.
Yes. This is actually what they based Tinder on, I have to say.
Yeah, this play, exactly.
This play is.
Yeah.
It's one big group chat.
Can I just say, at one point, Bardolph yells, "You Benberry cheese," at someone. There's a lot of cheese jokes in this.
Yeah.
I think in my notes, which, by the way, I was cracking up. I read the Folgers edition. It has, like, on the left page, like, always notes and, like, a picture every once in a while. This version, this place in particular, the notes would go past that page. So I'd have to be, like, flipping to the next page.
Yeah.
Because there were so many anachronisms, like, things that aren't around anymore. And, like, people saying something that they had to be, like, oh, this is actually this. And they're just using the wrong word to show that they're a fool. But,
wow.
All the cheese jokes are apparently, like, Welsh, like, mean things, because I guess Welsh people like steal cheese or something. That was like a stereotype of the day. I think that's what it said.
Yeah, the Welsh, cheese stealing Welsh. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
Don't leave your cheese out when you got a Welsh over. That's what we say.
My other favorite line is Falstaff's really excited when he's dressed as, like, you know, the horned guy at the tree waiting for the ladies when he thinks he's gonna have a three-way, and he yells out, "Let the sky rain potatoes." And I don't think there was a note in my book. And I was like, how can you possibly not notate the significance of that?
Yeah, the potatoes, look, it's a sex thing, okay? That's the other, okay, so I got another app. Okay?
All right, what's your other app?
It's Field, you know, Field, it used to be Thrinder. It's a real app. It's like a Tinder for threesomes, and now it's called Field. Okay,
playing it. Got it.
Right. Okay, and okay. So this at the ending here with this the cuckold and the horns. Field is much a sex app, and you go on it just to have sex, and everyone's on there just to have sex. It's like Tinder, but like if it was honest. So people go on there and role play. If you're into kinky shit, whatever. So Falstaff, he's just, like, into some role play. He wants to dress up as the devil, and he thinks that's what he's doing. He thinks he's gonna have a little threesome with a little role play, and he shows up.
You're
and,
right.
And he, you know, the potatoes, you know, that's just part of it. It's like, we didn't have anal beads back then.
It's just a potato.
You gotta wait for the sky to rain some potatoes. And then you string them together. And then you got yourself a little natural
play.
Yeah, you got just a little.
So they're like red potatoes, they're not like russet.
Anal potatoes.
So that's all he's doing. He just thinks he's gonna have a little three way, have a little butt fun, and but then, you know, he gets tricked, as you all know how it ends, and you know, got a little in too deep. Pardon the pun there.
Oh, the other thing about Bardolph is they always like call him Red Face. Because apparently he's always drunk. And in the very beginning, Falstaff's like, hey, I can't afford to keep everyone on, so Bardolph, you're fired. But the host, you should make this guy a tapster, which means a bartender. And Bardolph is like, this is a job I've always wanted. Like, that's like his next line. And it doesn't have anything to do with anything, but I just think
it's
that's
important.
So beautiful.
It's important. Sort of.
It's important, sort of.
That's the original LinkedIn. Silicon Valley was founded on the Mary... All of Windsor.
This is Windsor.
The original... This is actually based in America, in San Francisco Bay Area.
Got it.
And all these apps are just found... Yeah, if you dig deep enough in San Francisco, you will find the manuscript, the original manuscript of this play.
I'll believe it.
I have two things to talk about as kind of our thing. I just want to talk about cuckold and that word for a second real quick.
Yeah, because I think you've explained it to me, but I don't know if we've explained it on the podcast.
Yeah, so the cuckold is like the main part of this and how you don't want to be one. And what that is...
Or do you? Sometimes. Some people are into it.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that. So what it means is a cuckold is only something a man can be, and it's when his wife cheats on him. And it comes from, it was first mentioned by Chaucer, the author, and it comes from, like, a reference to the cuckoo bird, because he lays his eggs in other birds' nests so that they get raised by that bird, and, like, the cuckoo bird doesn't have to do anything. He just goes and lays his eggs. Or I guess she. And the specifics of cuckold in Shakespeare in these times are that everyone can see his mistake but him, so often he's depicted as having horns on his head, because they're on his head so obviously, but he can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of references to other people who had horns in their head, there's references to characters that have been actually cuckolded.
You say horn mad, that's a thing.
Horn mad, which can be, like, horny, and also I have horns on my head because I'm a cuckold. And, like, at one point in Act 2, Scene 1, they talk about Actaeon, which is the story in Greek mythology where Diana, the virgin goddess, is bathing in a pool, and this guy who's hunting with his dogs, like, spies on her, and she realizes that he's looking at her naked. She turns him into a stag, horns, and then he gets eaten by his own hunting dogs. Sad. Now, what's crazy is, in the past, like, 2 or 3 years, this term has come back to, like, modern language as this kink that's been around forever, but it hasn't really been talked about, I guess.
Well, it's been a kink, and then it's been reappropriated by the alt-right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh,
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No, I know it because I watched the show You're the Worst.
Oh, yeah.
And it comes up in there, and that was the first time I'd heard it in modern day stuff.
Yeah, it's been a porn category for a while.
Yes.
But, this is what I've heard from the witches. They know everything that's going on in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a porn category for a while, and then the alt-right, which is, you know, if you guys don't know, it's just a group of people who don't believe in human rights, or women rights. They,
casual.
They decided to reappropriate this word as, like, an insult to people who do think women should be treated equally. So if you say something such as, like, something ridiculous such as, like, oh, I think women should be able to do whatever they want with their bodies because it's their bodies, they might call you a cuck, a beta cuck.
I've seen this.
Things like this. And they've reappropriated it from the porn category, saying, like, oh, you're the type of man who, you know, has no balls and lets your wife fuck whoever she wants. But the irony is,
because the whole term of cuck in the modern usage means that someone who likes to see their significant other have sex with another person.
But that's the irony, because when you describe it that way, it's a beautiful thing. It's a man who likes that, so he likes it.
Yeah.
But the way it's used as an insult now is like, oh, you
can't
know, you're
have
out
sex
of control. You have no control over this. Of your wife.
You have no control over your woman. Shame on you. Mm-hmm.
Right, right, right. I don't think that cuckolding, even in my mm-hmm. Windsor days, was hated by everyone. Because if you look at what Mr. Ford is saying, like, he's embarrassed and he's jealous, but he pretends to be Mr. Brooke, and he's into that role play a little bit.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of into the cuckolding. I think this was all a little bit of a, look, I don't want to, like, give away anyone's secrets, but let's just say I know some things, okay? And let's just say Mrs. Ford, like, this was all just a little bit of role play. He wants to be a cuckold, but he doesn't want people to call him that. So he had to play up this whole thing so that they can do their, you know, reignite the flame. Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about is, are these the same people as the Henriette trilogy, which we've been reading?
Aren't they?
They are. Falstaff.
I did a little bit of research, and
there are theories, there are conspiracy theories.
Basically, people don't know what to make of it because they're the same names. Some of them have the same attributes, like Pistol still makes reference to all these classic mythologies and still is quick to fight. He's only in it for, like, a scene and a half, but he does do those things. And then Mistress Quickly is still, like, fun and, like, boisterous and is, like, talking to everyone. And Falstaff is, like, this guy who's drinking a lot and is a knight. And, you know, like, loves women, but none of them have the same jobs. Like, Mistress Quickly is supposed to run a bar, you know, and she's not doing that. And no one talks about the prince except for that one obscure reference by Fenton, who says he was friends with him, but we don't even see him hang out with any of these guys. and all this stuff. So some people think maybe this is a prequel. Some people think there's also, like, this rumor that the Queen said, Master Shakespeare, I would love to see a play with Falstaff falling in love. And he was like, all right, and, like, threw this together for the Queen. But Falstaff doesn't even fall in love.
I was gonna say,
so some people are like, that kind of sounds fake.
Falls in love with himself a little bit.
Right. So he doesn't really know. It's like inconclusive, but some people think maybe this is a prequel before they corrupt Hal. Like, this is like the adventures of Falstaff and friends.
Maybe it's like when, you know, there's the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
And then there's like the Marvel, then there's the Flash.
Like the TV show stuff?
Yeah, but they never really
meet.
Crossover, but it's the same character, but it's not, you know.
But it seems like, so there's just some disputes on the timeline of it. The placing of it.
You think it's
no,
before.
That's just one of the theories. Most people are like, we think this was just either Shakespeare writing something quickly out of request, either by the people themselves being like, we want more Falstaff, or the Queen, or whatever. Or it was just him, like, playing around, and it just stayed around.
You think this is before? I could see it being after, too, because Falstaff seems a lot more sad and
I felt like it was after because he seems sad and lonely.
He's lost his good friend.
Yes, that's true.
He's,
after Henry the Fourth
Part
Two,
fallen out of favor, and he's just
and
went
Mistress
to a
Quickly
town.
Has a new job, and just people change jobs, guys. It's not a conspiracy.
He's gone off,
but
to
they don't
a,
talk about anything.
They mentioned the king. We're far away. Okay, this is a small little town, and you gotta go through haunted woods to get to us.
It's true.
And you gotta walk through where all the actual fairies are in Midsummer Sanctuary.
Yeah.
You know, actually, I actually did that. I set up all those people.
You set up Hermia and Helena?
Hermia and Helena.
Aww.
Yeah, that was me.
Wow, good for you.
Me disguised. I dressed up as a fairy for this thing, and then I just liked it so much.
You were Puck?
I was Puck. I know. I kept walking in the woods. I liked the woods so much. You know, I can't.
Best friends with the king of the fairies.
Yeah,
man, good thing you didn't make him mad.
That was me. I don't want to brag or anything.
Yeah,
that
makes sense.
Was me.
That's awesome. That's cool.
I find that. That's canon.
This is actually a prequel to Midsummer's Night's Dream.
There you go.
That actually makes a lot of sense. Midsummer Night's Dream is like the good version of this play.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this play is just shit.
Yeah, I don't think we even
no
get
plot
to Mistress Ford
until Act 2.
The first scene of Act 2 is Mistress Page and Mistress Ford getting their letters.
Being like, hello, just here is
so,
the plot. Now
so
we're
funny.
Happening.
There's also a lot of just talking about Anne all throughout this whole thing.
Without doing anything.
There's like one of the first things they say about her, I think is, Slender says, she has brown hair and speaks small like a woman.
Yeah!
You know, women
which
always
is like,
be speaking small.
Women always be speaking small. No, it reads that either Slender doesn't care about Anne at all or is gay.
He's
because
definitely gay.
He's like,
yeah.
Oh, what's a compliment I can give her? She got brown hair and she talks small like a lady.
Look, there ain't nothing wrong with that. Slender's on the grinder. Slender is definitely gay. You know, they ask him if we marry you off to Anne, can you love her? And they go on way too long about that. And that's definitely a conversation about like can you push
all this aside.
Can you come from a woman's vagina? And is what they're really asking him. And he's like, I could probably do it if I imagine it's a butthole. And that's what that's about. And so, you know, everyone ends up happy because he doesn't get Anne. But he does say, yeah, everyone's talking about Anne. Everyone's in love with Anne. And Anne is just...
Anne is kind of boring.
She's really boring. She's just the only woman out there. And she's not even a virgin. Her and Fenton have definitely fucked. Come on.
What blows my mind is she, even though she ends up, like, sneaking off with Fenton to get married, she really doesn't say whether she likes him or not this entire play. I kept waiting for her half of, like, their love scenes, and he was always just like, I really like you. And she was like, all right, I guess.
Talk to my dad. If your other options are getting buried in the ground with turnips, you take what you can get.
There's also a really weird, this is a little bit slut-shaming at the end. Is this where the word slut came from, or has it come from another?
Oh my god, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Sluts and sluttery?
Pistol says, our radiant queen hates slut and sluttery. There's another mention to the queen. Maybe that was the queen asking for that line to be put in there.
No, so I had a note in here.
Is it the same word?
Apparently not. Sluts are slovenly kitchen maids without particular reference to sexual activity, and sluttery is like slovenliness. So they're basically like calling them like, you know, like base servants. But I think that's definitely where that term came from.
So originally, slut just meant basic B?
Basic B.
Yeah. No, not basic B.
Oh, working in the kitchen.
Why you be such a poe?
A poe?
A poor.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
You're a poor.
Yeah, you're a dirty poor person.
Yeah, you dirty poor person.
You guys looking to get set up? What do you guys want?
We can set her up, for sure.
What are you looking for?
Do you know reference to this movie, Guardians of the Galaxy?
I've heard of it. The witches told me about it.
The witches told you about it? Can we find her a Peter Quill, a Star-Lord?
Yeah, let's... But you're young, okay? Like, a lot of women come to me and they're not young. There's a lot of reference in this play about not being young. And that's okay, you know, if you're older women and you want another turn, that's totally fine. You're young, so I can tell you got a lot of options.
Thanks. That means I'm hot.
You are hot.
Yeah, some right swipes. You know, a lot of right swipes. The original right swipe was just a money bag.
Are you gonna talk about the Latin joke scene or not?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
First of all, we're introduced that Anne has a brother. Didn't know that.
It's supposed to be Anne's brother?
Yeah, because it's Mrs. Page's son.
Oh.
Yeah, why doesn't Mrs. Ford have any kids and Mrs. Page has so many kids?
That's part of the concept of why people think that Page is sure of his wife and Ford isn't, is because they don't have kids yet. So maybe he's impotent.
I see. Because
they're both older. Yeah. So that's what a lot of people use to help characterize Ford. But in this, Mistress Page just wants to make sure her son understands Latin and has...
Just make sure he's smart.
Sir Hugh do this whole scene with him. This little boy, William, who we never see again, except as a fairy. For whatever reason. And I wonder if he's the one who marries Slender. That'd be a good full circle. But,
Oh, yes. I mean, they're still in the Page family.
Exactly. I was going to say.
And he probably looks like Anne a little.
Oh, yeah, there
so
you go.
Slender's like, just close.
But better.
Basically, they're saying all these Latin things, and Mistress Quickly is taking them as English things. And Sir Hugh has a crazy accent, so he's also mispronouncing the Latin things to make them sound closer to these other English things. So he says, like, polecat, which means pretty, and then Mr. Squickly is like, polecats, they're not pretty, which is some, like, weasel from Europe.
A Polish person, I think, is a derogatory term
for
a Polish person.
Oh, snap! Polecats. He asks him the genitive tense, which is, like, a grammar term, and he says, genitive, horum, harum, horum. And Mrs. Quickly goes, vengeance of Ginny's case, fie on her, never name her child if she be a whore. Get it? Because it's like, Jenny, you said whore. That's my joke. That's like this whole scene.
Yeah.
It's just, you said that. That's this. And he's like, no, you crazy. I'm talking Latin for no reason. Never mentioned again.
Look, sometimes I just gotta fiery tweet, and I just gotta put it out there, and what he said made me think of a joke, and I just gotta put it out there.
Some fierce tweeting.
Yep.
Any modern day adaptations?
So, there aren't, because no one really does this play, because there's so many things that don't make sense. There's one movie from the 80s from the BBC. But what's crazy is there are 5 operas based off this story.
Oh, that does make sense.
And
there
one
are...
of them is really famous. It's called Falstaff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of sort of like character.
Yeah,
speeches.
It's a big character. Yeah. There's a lot of opportunities for some arias, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know how there's always all the different acts in Shakespeare, like 5 acts? Was there an intermission between every act, or did it just keep going?
No, I think it just kept going. I don't think they had intermissions in the day.
Cool.
That's positive, but I think so.
I think people probably went in and out of
the ground. Yeah, I think that's what it was. Like they could just do whatever they wanted.
bar. I feel like it's like an you know, when you're at a bar and then they ambush right. you with a stand-up show.
Right.
I feel like that's what the groundlings were like. They're just out there trying to get drunk.
Mm-hmm. I got gotcha.
It happens to be a play. And every once in a while they hear the word whore, and then they're like, what? And then they go back to drinking.
Yeah. Cool. Well, shall we read a scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
So we're going to read a little bit of Act 1, Scene 4. This is where Mistress Quickly has gotten the message from Slender about, like, you know, woo for me, and Dr. Kais is arguing with her about woo for me, and yeah, that's what's going on. She's kind of talking to both of them at the same time, and Dr. Kais is mad and is going to challenge Sir Hugh.
I'm glad he's so quiet. If he had been thoroughly moved, you should have heard him so loud and so melancholy. But notwithstanding, man, I'll do you, your master, what good I can. And the very yea and the no is, the French doctor, my master, I may call him my master, look you, for I keep his house, and I wash, wring, brew, bake, scour, dress meat and drink, make the beds, and do all myself.
'Tis a great charge to come under one body's hand.
Are you advised of that? You shall find it a great charge, and to be up early and down late. But notwithstanding, to tell you in your ear, I would have no word of it. My master himself is in love with Mistress Anne Page. But notwithstanding that, I know Anne's mind. That's neither here nor there.
You jackanape! Give this letter to Sir Hugh. By God, this a teach a scurvy jackanape priest to meddle or make. You may be gone. It is not good you tarry here. By God, I will cut all his two stones. By God, he shall not have a stone to throw at his dog.
Alas, he speaks but for his friend.
It is no matter for that. Do you not tell me that I shall have Anne Page for myself? By God, if you kill a Jack priest, and I have appointed mine host of the Jarter to measure our weapon, by God, I will myself have Anne Page.
Sir, the maid loves you, and all shall be well. We must give folks leave to pray. What the good ear?
Rugby, come to court with me. By God, if I have not Anne Page, I shall turn your head out of my door. Follow my heels, Rugby.
You shall have Anne. Fool's head of your own. No, I know Anne's mind for that. Never a woman in Windsor knows more of Anne's mind than I do, nor can do more than I with her. I thank heaven.
Yeah, playing sweet. All the fields.
I like it.
Now, after reading that, I'm like, is Mistress Quickly in love with Anne?
Oh.
Why is she telling everybody can have Anne? And she's like, I know Anne's mind.
That's true. That's yeah. Mind. Girl. That's girl, right. See you later, girl. I know
she's just collecting all this money so she can run off with Anne.
Yeah, yep, that's yep. The true end game. Maybe Anne's in love with her. That's why she's like, I guess, yeah. Fenton.
And
you seem easy to kill.
Isn't married either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a single lady.
Thanks so much for coming and visiting with us.
Thank you.
Got a lot of wisdom today.
Yeah.
Oh, this was very fun. Thank you guys so much.
I'm Allison.
I'm Beverly.
Deuces, peasants. Copyright Allison Powell 2017!
I won't put it in, just so it doesn't
get you can out. Put it in, I copyrighted
oh,
it.
Oh, shit.
yeah, that's how you copyright. Just scream it into, scream it into a podcast.
It's all the best
ones. It's so legit. That'll hold up in court. But, Your Honor, I shouted it.
But, sir, see, the difference is, though, I shouted it in a podcast.